Why don't we just take a minute and pray, and we'll dig in. Lord, I really thank you for the opportunity to be here, to be talking about this idea of leadership and what you've been doing here in our ministry. I pray that you'll help us to come together, God. All of us are here because we have an interest in ministering to college students. And help us to pool our mind and our resources and learn from each other. And I pray that you'd be with us as we try to make some sense and understanding on how you want us to go about doing this ministry. Amen. So, you know, these terms like indigenous and underground and movement, these are all kinds of things that people throw around, and sometimes they use them in different ways. So I thought we would just take a minute and kind of define some of these terms the way that I'm intending to use them. What I mean by underground is a non-traditional, decentralized, independent group that's outside the mainstream. One of the things, we've spent a lot of time in our ministry going out and looking at what other people are doing with college students. We've looked at the parachurch organizations, we've looked at different churches that have ministry to young singles. And one thing that seems to be pretty different about our approach is it's decentralized and independent, and that most of what we do, we're kind of a church within the church. The idea is to raise up students to lead their own ministry. And if you're a part of the college ministry, you've got several meetings a week that you go to, and none of them are really directly connected to the main ministry that goes on up here. All of our meetings are on campus in the Ohio State area. That's the school where we're really based. All of our community, everything basically goes on down there. Now, there are connections to the adult group, which we'll get into, but basically, the adult group is supporting us financially with prayer, with leadership support, and hoping that we will start a movement of our own and that we will be the next generation of Xenos coming up. But they're not looking to see young college faces in the adult meetings up here and disappointed when they don't see that. They know that what we're doing is down on campus, and they support that wholeheartedly, which is a pretty awesome situation. What I mean by a movement is organically growing. And all that means is people tend to reach their friends for Christ. Then they disciple those friends. Then those friends reach their friends for Christ, and they disciple them. And this process goes on and on and on until people have developed what we call a personal ministry. You've got people that you're mentoring, and they're mentoring people, and maybe they're mentoring people, to the point where there's a group of 5, 10, maybe 15 people that you're deeply or indirectly involved in that understand you and that are kind of under your leadership. And as these groups divide, as our small groups divide, they divide along these relational lines. So like a cell dividing, it continues and it multiplies out and it multiplies out. It's kind of a slow, rigorous process compared to the way that that some people approach things. But what you have is, as this grows and multiplies out, as one group splits into two, and then two into four, and then four into 16, and so on and so on and so on, it just accelerates and gets faster and faster, but you're able to stay on top as far as the idea of personal discipleship and quality of investment that goes on with people. With a movement, it's something that compels its members to get on board and work toward a unified goal. This is something that you get caught up in. It's something that happens to you. You get involved and you see that there's something exciting here, that the Lord is using people in a significant way to impact your own culture. And you see that not only is this going on, but it's asking you, it's begging you to be a part of it. And that's going to require sacrifices on your part. But if you do this and you invest yourself here, you can be used by God just as powerfully as this leader or this other person that you've seen. And so the reason we call it a movement is because it has momentum. It's something that we're all a part of, but that is also happening to us. We use what we call a three-tiered structure: home church, cell group, and central teaching. Those are the three basic meetings we have in the college ministry, and they each meet every week. Home church, we'll get into more detail in each of these, but home church is organic church growth. It's led by college-age men and women. It's a smaller group. Cell group is the only group that we have that is closed to non-believers, and we'll get into why. But this for group discipleship, leadership training, and accountability, and central teaching, which grows with the home churches. All the home churches come together once a week for what we call CT. And this is a good entry point for non-believers and for feeding of Christians of all ages. This is where you're going to get our best teachers teaching to the large group setting. Some people like to show up in a large group because then they feel more anonymous. They feel like they're not going to get caught up and expected to participate in a conversation. They can kind of hide in the crowd. So that's a great place to bring a person like that. Someone who's coming to a first meeting that's afraid of the big crowd, they'd like to come to home church. You know, so either one is a good place to bring new people. And then this is the core where a lot of the discipleship that we do actually occurs. So home church, what is home church and how does its basic structure work? It's a weekly meeting with 20 to 50 students that meet in various homes throughout the community that we have down at Ohio State. It's typically led by 4 to 6 college-age students who provide original teaching, discipleship, and pastoral counseling to the membership. If you're a home group leader, you are the pastor for those people. If you're a home group leader, you're ordained. You can marry people. You can, they're going to look to you for guidance, for pastoral counseling, for discipleship. The kids that are doing this, the way that they teach, we don't have manuals or books that we fill in on a weekly basis. They're doing original expository teaching every week. We've got a huge resource center here. They can go and they can get a tape and they can listen to a topic or a book of the Bible that's been taught here. And they can listen to that, and sometimes they follow a lot from that. A lot of times they'll just go off totally on their own and draw from the training and the equipping that they've been given and come up with a new teaching every week. Leaders here, in order to be a home church leader, it typically takes about 3 to 5 years. You have to complete coursework. We have a year and a half of courses that are really pretty tough. They're basic theology, pastoral counseling, leadership, all kinds of central issues that leaders need to know. They meet once a week on Wednesday nights for 3 hours a night, and they're tough. What I always tell people is this is like taking a 3-credit-hour college course. There's tests, there's midterms, there's finals. They are graded, and they do fail people. They really have a pretty high bar as far as the way that they challenge these guys and their knowledge, because they know that these are the guys that are going to be out there basically to a large degree autonomously leading a church. And if their doctrine gets screwed up, if they head the wrong direction, they're going to take 30 or 40 people with them. So they're pretty adamant about getting done with these classes and serious that people learn the material. They have to have been discipled by someone else. You have to be discipling at least one other person. We are really rigorous about discipleship. We really think this is where the great work of the Lord gets done in people's lives, is through group and one-on-one mentoring. And if you're not discipling someone, if you're not doing that kind of ministry, we don't want you to be a leader. You have to be a member of our servant team. Here at Xenos, that's our deaconship. In order to get on the servant team, you have to complete your year and a half of courses. You have to be discipling someone else. You have to be nominated by someone who's on the servant team. They feel like you're an example that the church can set forward as a servant. You have to be a part of our fiscal support team, which it means that you've pledged to be a good, consistent giver of your money, because we think that it's very important that leaders set an example there. These are all things that are required to get on the servant team, and you can't be a home church leader if you're not there. And then this last one is truly important, if someone's going to be a leader, they have to have developed a personal following or a personal ministry. And what I mean by this is we don't choose leaders. Our philosophy is not we look out and we see who's the best leader or who's the most gifted person who stands out in the crowd and is charismatic and draws people in. We look out and we say, who's God raising up? Who is already leading, and all we're doing is acknowledging this person is a leader. And so we don't, all of our staff, all of our home group leaders, any position in Xenos, they have all been raised up indigenously. We don't hire anyone in ever. And the reason for this is as part of a movement, as part of our philosophy, we really try to make it clear to people that a leader is a servant. A leader is someone that's getting down underneath other people, they're laying down their life for them, and they're lifting them up through investment. If we hire someone else in and plug them inorganically into this system, and what we're saying is, this, and we say this person's a leader, well, they don't have any investment. They don't have anyone where they've set this example. They may be the greatest person, the greatest pastor, they may be super pastor, you know, and be the most dynamite person ever, but they have not exhibited that and that to other people. So if you want to be a leader, what we ask is that you lead. You know, we make it really clear to everyone, the title of leader is not what you shoot for, you know, and you don't have to have that title in order to lead. We ask everyone to lead. And then those who really and truly do it and who engage and really lay down their lives for other people, then we say, yeah, you are a leader. And if you don't have that following, that personal ministry going on, making you a leader, I mean, by definition, you're not a leader by the way we understand the term. A key component to what we do in the college ministry as far as home churches is ministry houses. A ministry house is a group of 4 to 12 guys or girls who decide to live together. They devote their time, their money, their energy to the service of the home church. Ministry houses usually have 1 or 2 leaders. They're accountable to the leadership of the home church. They work together in union. Just about all of our college home churches meet in ministry houses. To give you an idea of how this works, in the Ohio State campus area of about maybe 3 square miles, we have 33 ministry houses. 33, these are really beachheads in the midst of the culture that we're trying to reach, scattered all over the place, between the sororities and the fraternities and the party houses. Everywhere on campus, you're about 3 blocks away from a house of great brothers or sisters that are living together, striving to reach this culture for the Lord. What this has done has been extremely advantageous in a few areas. One is it's turned us into a year-round ministry. Many college ministries, you know, they dry up in the summer, people go home. These guys, they're there year-round. They've got this great community, these people that they're involved with, and basically they don't want to go home, so they get jobs. Our numbers do not drop off in the summer at all. In fact, it's usually one of the best times where people really get to reach out a lot more, because we found that it's a lot easier to reach people at work than in class. And so as everyone comes out of class and goes into the workforce for the summer with all the other college students that are here, we find that our attendance actually goes up a little bit, and it's a really sweet time. People have more time to hang out, more time to devote to each other, and we really like summer. And that's all because of ministry houses. If we did not have that, we would probably see the summertime would be a time off. The disadvantage of this, I'll let you know right off, is dorm ministry. A lot of people that are doing college ministry like to target the dorms and get out there and really let people know what's going on. It gets real tough to do that when you don't have anyone living in the dorms. Just about everyone who gets involved in our ministry wants to live in one of these houses. That's been a sacrifice we think is worth it. In our ministry last year, we saw 600 different people come out to a home church for the first time. And about 1/6 of those stuck around. And so if we felt like we were having a hard time reaching out to people, we were having a hard time getting non-Christians in the doors, we would probably abandon this. And kind of the linchpin for this whole thing is this is not a Christian bubble. We really make it clear. We have a covenant that people sign. If you're going to live here, this is a higher standard. Ministry houses are about discipleship, and it's about having an impact on your culture. So you get in there, you have this great community. You know, you guys are eating meals together, praying together, studying together. You have probably at least 1, probably 2 meetings a week at your house where you have to get it cleaned up. They're making coffee and getting snacks, and, you know, it's a real position of service. And if you're not into that, then don't live there. You know, it's not something that we recommend for everyone, and we really try to make sure that people know what they're getting into when they get into this situation. And the real fear, the real danger of this is that everyone has this kind of real nice holy huddle, and they get together, and this is real great. You know, we love each other, and this is real warm and fuzzy and great, and they stop looking outside themselves, and they just turn completely inward. So we pound the drum all the time. If you're going to do a ministry house, it's about impacting your culture. If you turn inward, then you're not a ministry house. And we really make it clear to people that this isn't just the time to huddle down and weather the storm. This is the time to get out on the battlefield and get some work done for the Lord. And they get the message. They really do. They don't just turn inward. I would say this is really one of the yeah. There's no training necessary in order to live in a ministry house, but what they're doing is, in order to live in a ministry house, you have to be committed to discipleship, which means you're on the track with toward home church leadership, toward all these different things. If you're not taking class for a year or so, you're going to put that off. You can still live in a ministry house, but you have to be meeting with someone and getting mentored and discipled. You have to be the requirements for a ministry house are that you go to home church, cell group, and CT, that you attend house meeting, get your house job, and that you're committed to discipleship. And so those are the minimum requirements. But if you're already doing those things, you're really already on your way, well on your way toward home church leadership. 17 to 28. A lot of times people get into trouble at home, and the parents don't want them to live there anymore, and you know, they've recently come to Christ and they need a place to stay, and they end up in ministry houses. We've seen everything. I mean, across the board, I think we've had 15 and 16 year olds living there before. But the thing that we really pound home there is it's not a boarding house. This isn't something, you know, where it's just like, hey, you need a place to crash, you know, stay with us. There are expectations that are placed on you if you want to live there, and you're under grace, you're not under law, but, you know, it's part of the program, and you're living there is a commitment that you're making to the home church. This is a sweet wineskin that we use. It's been super effective. When I first started in this ministry 8 years ago, we had two ministry houses. There was a guy's house and a girl's house. And there were two home churches. There's now 33 ministry houses and 14 home churches. So this is the kind of thing. The houses split. They get full. They split in half, and they start out. And then they fill up. They split in half, and they just keep going.
How soon do people
pay rent? Yep. There's no financial or legal connections to Xenos and the ministry house at all. The reason being that if anything goes on there, the church could be liable. And so what these guys do is they get the landlord, they sign the lease.
So they're not owned by, they're still owned by landlords somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a nice situation here at Ohio State where property is pretty cheap. You can get a 4-bedroom house for maybe $1,200 a month right on campus. And what we do is we'll pack 8 people in there. You know, 2 people per bedroom, and you know, rents is cheaper to live in a ministry house than it is to live in the dorms. Yeah, so it works out real well.
Your ministry leaders, your ministry house leaders, do they go through the training, or are they just working with someone beside them that they need the house?
Often, ministry house leaders, some of them are home church leaders. But they don't. That's not required. They're definitely on the track. They're taking their classes. These are the guys that are the biggest servants, that are really, you know, laying down their lives and setting example for the other people in the house. It just, everyone knows who the leader is. It just happens. I mean, people really understand what a servant is, and those are the people that become the house leader, the home church leader, the cell group leader. I've been involved in this for a long time, and I think maybe once or twice there's been a big dispute about who should be house leader. And when that happens, we know that both candidates are not it. You know, when the stuff like that happens, it becomes real clear. The Lord has a funny way of rooting those kinds of things out. Each home church also has what we call sit-in leaders. Usually these are guys that have been around for a year or more. They're on track. They're taking their classes. They're discipling. They'll teach occasionally at home church and cell group. They'll disciple other people. They help with administrative stuff. And they'll come to the leaders' meetings and get a feel for what's going on there. But they're not official leaders themselves. So how do home churches work with the idea of vision? Well, if you're a 20-year-old, you show up at this home church, maybe you're a non-Christian for the first time, and you see a 24-year-old teaching from the passage, from the scripture, you see, look around the room, everyone's basically your age. It's a pretty exciting thing. And maybe if you receive Christ, then the idea might occur to you, maybe God can use me in the lives of other people as well. And you've immediately got a group of peers that are your age, that come from a similar background, that are saying, you know what, you can do that. What this guy is doing, you know, he's only been here 4 years himself. You know, 4 years from now, you could be doing exactly what he's doing. And people really get excited about that. They see that people are being used significantly by the Lord, and they say, I want to do that too. You can become a Bible scholar and a teacher. You know, there is an issue of gifting. Not everyone is a gifted teacher. And so what you'll find is when you go to a home church on various nights, different people, there's a teaching rotation going on. Different people are teaching. Some nights it'll be really discussion-oriented, and that's because the person in there isn't a gifted preacher. But they've been trained on how to get people involved and draw people in and get great discussion going. Some nights someone will be in there raining down fire and brimstone and blasting people, you know, with fiery preaching. Other nights, you know, it mixes up. Everyone has a role that they can play. Not everyone is going to be a teacher. You don't have to teach in order to be a home church leader. But everyone has to be able to communicate God's word. They have to know, they have to be equipped, and they have to be able to communicate it in some way, whether that be by preaching, teaching, discipleship, evangelism. Everyone needs to know how to communicate God's word. And so you're getting there and you're seeing these guys are sharp. You know, they know their apologetics. They know their history. You know, when we do sit down and do an expository teaching, you know, they're talking about deep issues of the word. You know, they're talking about prophecy. They're talking about Christology. They're talking about, you know, all the different aspects, you know, that the word brings out and the depths of God's knowledge and his revelation to us. And these are young people that are out doing that. They see that they can be significantly used by God and have an impact in our culture. That's our newest disciple right there. Cell groups are a weekly meeting. They're closed to non-Christian. There's 5 to 15 men or women. These groups focus on discipleship, leadership development, accountability, and pastoral care. This is group discipleship. It's a rule, but all rules do get broken. That non-Christians aren't really invited out to this. When they show up, we don't kick them out the door. But what happens is here is it's once a week where you get together with your brothers or your sisters in Christ who have committed to the same things that you have, and you get deep into the Word. You really talk in a real way about issues in your life. These guys are holding you accountable, asking you. This is where you can be asked the bold questions that we all need to be asked from time to time about sin issues in our lives. This is where you get a lot of community. Like, these people are really going to become your best friends. They're going to become the people who know you the best, understand you the best. And this is also where a lot of your best Bible training is going to come from. Cell groups have one or two leaders with, again, deep and original teaching from the Word. And what this is really doing is this is supplementing the one-on-one mentoring that we do. And a lot of this is set up as kind of checks and balances from the standpoint of if you have a one-on-one mentor and you're being discipled and they're getting a little off or a little strange in some of their teaching, you've got a group of people that you're also covering similar material to where you can go and say, this person was telling me this, you know, is that right or is that wrong? How does that square with the Bible? This is why we do plurality of leadership. You know, if it were spinning off these home groups in all these different directions that are basically autonomous, there's no one showing up every night to hear what these people are saying. There's no one, there's no book that they're going by so that we can be guaranteed that they have sound doctrine. That's why we have plurality of leadership in everything we do. In our past, we learned people need one person who's in control of these things becomes an easy target for the devil. And so we have two men leaders, two female leaders, minimum requirement for every home church. We have two cell group leaders. You have group discipleship. You have one-on-one discipleship. There's checks and balances. So if anyone's getting a little strange or a little funky in what they're teaching, it becomes clear really quick, and you've got other people that that are in your life that can help you straighten that person out and yourself out. These are important things in order to keep the doctrine straight and keep people on track. High content in Bible training. Like I said, supplements one-on-one discipleship relationships. Cell group, it's the most important meeting of the week. It's, you know, my guys, we get together on Friday nights. We've got like 12 guys right now. Every week we're there Friday night studying, hanging out. We'll study the Word maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then head out, go to the movies, you know, go shoot pool, spend time together. This weekend we're going camping. We're just going to head out for a night, go camping, come back the next morning. People really enjoy this. They really get into this, the community and the relationships that are able to be developed there. Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a minute. I got some things to say about that at the end. For now, I would say, in reality, college students have more time and freedom and energy than anyone else on earth. And if they're not doing this, they're doing other things that that lead to away from God. That was my experience as a college student. I'm 26 years old. They have a lot more time and freedom than they want to admit. And we do have a high bar. We have a lot of stuff going on. The central teaching, that's our CT. This is where all the home groups come together on a weekly basis to hear excellent expository teaching. Our lead pastor, Dennis McCallum, comes down to campus, our main building. Our building is right in the middle of all the fraternities and sororities. It's an old church. We went in, we ripped out the pews and the altar. We brought in chairs like this. We turned the kids loose and said, paint it, make it look like you want it to look. And he comes down, he teaches there, and all 14 of our home groups show up. There's usually about, right now we're averaging about 250 in attendance. Now what is interesting about this is we average about 380 in home groups. Most churches that we've experienced get real good attendance at the big meeting, and then they have a real hard time getting people to join into the small groups. We're exactly the opposite. We have 380 that attend home groups, and we have a hard time getting everyone out to CT. And part of that is because of the rigorous schedule. But basically, people are real excited about what's going on in these individual communities. What I've found personally in my own life experience is that people in my generation really lack and yearn for community. They want real relationships. They want deep relationships. Not that everyone doesn't want those things, but there seems to be an emphasis on wanting something more that's more like a family, that I think a lot of us have not experienced those things. And they love home group. They eat it up. And so we're always kind of kicking people around, being like, you know, come out and support the CT. The teachings there are amazing. Dennis really lays down great teaching. And it's great for getting vision for what God is doing in the whole group. What this is it's a great place to bring outreach. One unusual tactic, strategy that we have there is it's a seeker's sensitive meeting, but it's also deep. He'll roll out really tough issues and tough passages. I mean, he's basically going through each week, going through a book, and he doesn't skip over or pull any punches on anything. And a lot of times people think, you know, if you've got young believers coming out and you're talking about something like wives submit to your husbands or things that are culturally controversial, that you should skip over those things. He'll take them head on. And the belief that, one, the rest of us are there to be fed and learn how to deal with passages like that, but two, that people when they're brought through and they see that that we're not ashamed and that we that there are understandable and good explanations for some of the hard things that are said in the Bible, that's more compelling than repulsive. Components of the essential teaching. We have our building on campus. No, we were in it. Yeah. This has turned into be a real interesting thing. We got this building on campus. It's got, had decent parking, had about seating for about 250. And it's got a large auditorium upstairs. It's in this old brick church. And we acquired this about six years ago, almost 7 years ago. And like I explained how they went in and redecorated. And then downstairs, we created this kind of, we created a ministry house. We had a living situation. The guys were there paying rent. They were helping the church with the expense of the rental of the property. And it worked out real well. But we started growing so much at our central teaching that we needed more space. So in the last year, what we did was we moved those guys out. We cleared out the whole basement. We made it one big open room. And we went to local used restaurant equipment stores. We bought tables. We bought restaurant booths. We bought a cappuccino maker. We bought four big screen TVs and put one in each corner of the room. And then we painted it and decorated it in as seedy and nasty and disgusting a manner as you can imagine, because it looks exactly like the places on campus where people love to hang out. If you know the area, you probably know, I've heard of Hound Dogs or the Blue Danube. They're known as kind of the most disgusting, dark, smoky, black, gross places you can hang, and that's where the college students are all the time. So that's what our basement looks like. We painted the ceiling black. We put up track lighting. It's gross. But they love it. We love it. I love it. And what we do is we have two cameras working upstairs with a video board. So if the upstairs is full, you can go downstairs, you can get your cup of cappuccino, and you can sit in a booth and watch on the big screen TV, watch the teaching that's going on upstairs. It's expanded our capacity by almost 100 people. It's opened up a lot of new opportunities for ministry. Part of what we've seen, and the campus scene at Ohio State, there's this group called Campus Partners that are going in and revitalizing the campus area. They're wiping out the places where students love to hang out, and they're replacing them with highbrow shopping and fashion and really expensive restaurants, places that college students typically can't afford. So it's going to look real beautiful down there, but all the local hangouts are disappearing. So what our goal is to use this place more and more, have it open more and more. We just hired a part-time guy to just run the facility, and we're getting the word out there. If you want a place to study where you can sit back, you can watch TV, you can stay as long as you want, and there's not going to be a waitress hounding you to get out of there. You can get a cup of coffee for 50 cents, a cappuccino for a dollar, and you can spend as much time there as you want. And it's about a five-minute walk from anywhere on campus. We're real excited about the potential this has as a service to the community. One of the more exciting things that has happened recently, in the last month, we've opened it up as an all-ages venue for different rock bands. In Columbus, this is secular music. We don't put on Christian shows. We have a guy that manages. We say if people want to play, they've got to get through him. And this is a public service of the church to the community. If you show up to one of these, what you're going to see is a concert. You're not going to run into somebody with a smile and a tract, you know, and a hug, saying, you know, hey, do you know Jesus? And the reason that we're doing this is not, we are using this as a way to reach people, but the primary focus of this is as a public service to the community. There's nowhere in our town where people under the age of 21 can go and hear a show. The guy that's running our facility gets 75 emails a day from different bands that want to play here. And the whole system, the whole thing is set up. It's got a great sound system. It's got a great atmosphere. It's one of the larger venues here in town. We've been written up in the local papers with pretty glowing reviews about what we've done there. And the whole thing is set up not to make money, but to provide a place for people to play. So when the bands play there, they get a bigger cut. And what's happened is they'll show up, they'll have a show, and people will be there in our building, and they'll say, what is this place? You know, why is this meeting in a church? And there are people there that can answer questions, and there are information and pamphlets available if people want to know that. And it's more of just an entry point where people can see we're sincere about meeting the needs of the culture and the desires of the culture that we're serving, and that they can come there and partake and use the facilities that we provide and not feel like they're going to get waylaid and hammered at the door. It's been super successful. We're doing 3 shows a week right now. The guy we hired is just overwhelmed with requests, and they have all kinds of genres. We've been checking out some local chat groups lately. They have these hip-hop and punk rock chat lines where you can get on and people talk about the different venues and the stuff going along, and people are really talking about us. They're really saying, who are these guys? I think they're a cult. I think that they're this. I think that they're that. You know, I went there and you know, they told me I was going to hell. You know, they're fabricating lies, and then people are coming in and defending, and then other people are saying, you know, what is going on with this? You know, what is it? You know, we got to go and we got to see, we got to check this out. We got to see what this is about. And we're just kind of sitting back and reveling in what the Lord is doing, because he's really taking and challenging people to come out and see what this is about for themselves. And we think it's got a lot of potential to have a huge impact for the Lord in the long run.
Question about that.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of constraints, written or unwritten, regarding the groups at play? I mean, what, you get some satanic band in? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't necessarily have to be written, but I mean, how do you address that or deal with that, or is it a problem?
We haven't had to deal with that at this point.
Okay.
I know it's like, the punk movement here is pretty strong, and there's some really tough racist veins in the whole punk movement. We typically have made it clear to people that we will allow people to play, but we want them to be cool. If you're a Satan group, we're not gonna turn you away, but no sacrificing animals or biting off chicken heads or, you know.
Right.
But it hasn't really come up. But I can see that as long as we had a sense that the group was willing to work with us and wasn't just itching for the chance to get in there and destroy the place, which is something that we are concerned about. We've got a significant investment in there with equipment. The number one thing that we look at is, how good is the band? Are they, you know, we have quality standards. We don't want just anyone to play there. And we're at a point where we've got so many bands that want to use the facility, we can really be selective about whether or not they're good. So we want an eclectic selection, and we want something that's going to be decent quality. As far as their religious orientation or message, we're not really... drawing a strong line there. I can see where we would if it was something really outrageous, but it would have to be pretty extreme, I think. The venue has been there for a year, but we've only been having the bands there for about a month. Right.
Kids following, inevitable.
Yeah.
Brown guys.
Mm-hmm. We have a staff for each show that's there. If there's drug use, they're out. They're removed, and it's known. As far as alcohol consumption, we've come up with kind of an innovative solution there. We allow people to bring their own beverages. They check them at the door. We check their ID. They get a bracelet that says, I'm 21, and then they can come up, we put it under refrigeration, and they come up and they say, can I have one of my beers? We give them one, and we give them two. And that way we're in control. If they're getting out of control with it, we cut them off immediately. We say, look, you can leave, you can take your beer with you, and you can go drink it somewhere else. But you've had two or three, and that's really quite enough for you tonight. And people like it. They've gotten into it, and it's basically we're protecting ourselves with liability, and permitting this to go on in a way that forces moderation. 127 East 16th Avenue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a 6-7 minute walk from any of the OSU facilities. We've affectionately named it Red 16. It's red-16.com. You can see what shows are playing there. There's a little snippet in there about our philosophy, and having it there as a public service to the community. And we're really excited to see what God's going to do with that.
Ryan, you said that ministry houses are not financially tied to Xenos to avoid liability.
Correct.
Well,
that's a part of our budget. The rent for that comes out of that is connected to Xenos, the college building.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the bands take money.
Yeah.
How does that work out? Do they charge at the door?
Yep. Yeah, there's a cover charge at the door.
Who collects it, one of their people or one?
No, one of ours. What we do is we work it out with the bands ahead of time. The guy who does the sound, I think he gets $15. We collect the money, and if there are any damages or things that occur, then the band has to help pay for that out of that money. We've not had anything like that happen so far, and we've had over 20 shows. And so the band gets almost the entire door, which is a totally different arrangement. If they play anywhere else in Columbus, they're going to get a much smaller percentage because these are places of business that are there for profit.
How much is the typical
charge? $3.
$3?
Yeah. So we keep it low.
Versus $3.
Yep.
Compared to what they normally
pay. Yep. I mean, it's a very win-win situation where, we'll get 70 people out to hear a show. They'll make $210. They slip 15 to the sound guy. The band has $190 or $180 to split amongst themselves for a show. Whereas if they played anywhere else, they'd probably have half that. I mean, these bands aren't making money, with the underground music scene. And we've really made extra strides to make sure that our sound system, our monitors, everything is really above par. The bands really like to play there. The crowds are really starting to like to go there and listen because it sounds good, and it's developing into a really cool environment that we think is really, we're hoping and praying is really going to have a huge impact. So the purpose of central teaching, this big meeting, is to tie all the home groups together, give them a common vision, to give people a big picture of what God is doing. You're caught up in this movement. You know what's going on in your home church. You come together on Thursday night and you see what's going on in all the other home churches. And you realize what I'm doing is important, but I'm also a part of something bigger that's important as well. Some principles that I wanted to share that we really believe in raising up leaders in the college ministry. One thing is setting an example as a leader, demonstrating the joy of serving the Lord. We find a lot of leaders they're in a rigorous situation. As a leader, you're stretched beyond what you would normally be able to take as far as a workload, as far as pressures in your life. And a lot of times what happens with leaders is you'll talk to them and they're always giving you a sense, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so drained, I need a break, I'm burned out. Well, if you're doing that, who's going to want to be a leader? Who's going to want to come and say, what you're doing, I want that in my life? Leaders need to be examples in all ways, and I think an important way is by demonstrating the joy that, I'm in a situation where I do feel an extra sense of pressure. I feel like I am a target for the evil one. But you know what? That drives me to dependence in the Lord, and it's sweet. It's sweet to be used by God in such a significant way. Leaders need to be able to cast a vision. One thing that is really cool about what's going on here at Xenos is it's very clear that no ministry position is closed. If you want to be a cell group leader, then you need to work to make that cell group split. You need to build up your personal ministry, get people out, and make it split, and you can be a leader in the next split. You want to lead a home church, same thing. You want to teach at a central teaching? Same thing. You know, I've been here for 8 years. I received Christ when I was 18 years old through the high school ministry here, came into the college group in 1994, went through school, graduated, was hired full-time here as a pastor in the college ministry, and am now subbing in and helping, teaching CT. And, you know, what's being said to me by Dennis right now is, you want to teach CT? Well, we got to split this one. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's take this group of 250 and let's split it out. And so, you know, I'm all fired up. I want to do the big meeting. I want to teach. You know, it's the whole associate pastor. I want to get in there. And it's possible. If God chooses and wills, and I put myself in a position where he can use me, there's nothing that is done. There's no type of ministry. There's no role that I can't play here where God can't use me. And as I see that and I get excited about that and I express that to the other people, say, you know, you can be a CT teacher. You can be a home church leader. We're going to have to split our CT soon. I'm working full-time. I'm the only full-time guy in a ministry of 380 people. Who are we going to hire on next? Who's going to be the next guy? People see that and they think, I can spend my life doing ministry and impacting people for God. And we've recently set become a, kind of a branch campus for Trinity International University in Chicago. I'm working on my seminary degree right now. I'm getting a Master's of Arts in Religion. The church is supporting me in that. They're giving me time to work at that. They're paying my tuition, and they're telling me that we're doing this because we believe in you and we want you to be a leader. And those are things that are going to be available to everyone, where you don't have to be plugged out. You don't have to be pulled out. I've spent 8 years of my life developing a personal ministry, investing myself in people. And now if I want a master's degree, I'm going to have to uproot and go somewhere else and leave that behind. Well, that's not the situation anymore. People really can do this. They really can engage in this. And they're really getting excited and seeing that vision. They see their own people, their own age, teaching and leading groups. They're encouraged to develop a personal ministry, successfully raise up disciples into leadership. Not only can you be a leader, but you can be a guy that raises up other leaders. In fact, that's actually sweeter, is what people find. It's sweet to work, to get equipped, and to get to the point where you're a leader, but it's even sweeter to have people that you're invested in raise up as peers. Now they're leading. You're a home group leader, and they're a home group leader. And, you know, you're working on the next guy, and they're working on the next guy. Self-multiplication. Replacing yourself and then creating a new church, dividing the church, and having those roles filled by new people. Equipping, an essential part of raising up a leader. The classes we hear, like I said, they're rigorous, and personal discipleship. If you don't know your material, if you don't dedicate yourself to scholarship and studying the word, you're in danger. You will get twisted and you will stray from the mark. Setting a high bar. We really believe strongly, as the movemental aspect of what we're doing keeps going, that people see that God is moving and they get caught up into this, that a big part of that is having high expectations. It's not a legalistic, you know, be all you can be, go, 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 drill sergeant kind of an idea, but it's the kind of idea where what you're saying is, what I thought Bill Lawrence was saying beautifully the other night is, you're being asked to do something that you could never do with tools that you don't have for the rest of your life. That's exactly what we need to be communicating to people, is you need to be stretched, not beyond what you can do, but way beyond. That you are going, if you commit yourself to this and put yourself in a dependence situation with the Lord, you can be stretched further and further and further to where you'll be doing things that you never thought possible. There is a high bar. The typical schedule for someone, and this is the typical average person that's involved in our ministry, has home churches on Monday night, they take a class on Wednesday night, they go to CT on Thursday night, they go to Friday cell group on Friday night, and most home groups have a prayer meeting on Sunday night. Many of these guys are also doing high school ministry. They're leading a high school group on Tuesday night. Many of them live in ministry houses and have a house meeting before the prayer group meeting on Sunday. This is rigorous stuff. People are stretched. But like I said before, you know, college students really have a lot more time and a lot more freedom. We've graduated doctors and dentists and engineers that have been become in the process of doing that have also become leaders in our group. And we all know how intensive the pursuit of those degrees are. And part of that is stepping out in faith. Part of that is allocation of resources. And part of that is seeking strength from the Lord. And so what I would say to your earlier question about how do people do this, they have no category for how they can do this, but they do it. You know, when you set a high bar and say, look, these are the challenges, maybe you're going to have to cut. You'd be surprised what happens when you cut, must see Thursdays, or, you know, I haven't seen an original episode of Friends ever in my life because I've been down doing high school ministry for 8 years. You know, I don't see it till it comes out on reruns. We're not around to watch the shows. You know, we're out there doing ministry. When you cut those things out and really take that time to devote to God, what most people do is they have a schedule where they start, you know, class maybe at 9 a.m, they're out by 3. They'll study from 3 to 6 and, you know, be ready to go at 8 o'clock for the meeting that night. Usually 3-4 hours a night of study a day is plenty to do ministry. And see, the ministry aspect isn't work. The ministry aspect is food. This is how we get filled up. This is how we get excited. This is how we get refreshed. This is how we get renewed, is by doing the Lord's work. If we're doing it in dependence with Him. Christ said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Well, that's only if you're in the yoke. If you're pulling against it, you're going to burn out. But if you're seeing, you know, if you're seeing Monday night home church, Wednesday night class, Thursday night CT as obligations, you're going to be cooked. But if you're seeing them as opportunities to be used by God to further His kingdom and are getting excited about yet another night where you get to serve and love other people sacrificially, you're excited to go. It's not burdensome, it's exciting. I'll get to you in just a sec. The question is, will people do this? This chart shows the people, the numbers that we've raised up on the servant team in the last 5 years. These are people who are ready to go as home church leaders. This number comes out to about 60 people in 5 years. Well, we said it takes about 4 people to lead a home group. So you can do the math and realize that there are significant numbers of home group leaders that are being generated on a yearly basis. These guys have been through the 3 to 5 year process and are ready to go. And the numbers are growing as the group gets larger, the number gets larger. And the challenge is to keep it proportional to the growth of the groups. This is what home group membership looks like over the past 5 years. In September of 97, we were down close to 150. In May of this year, we were hitting just under 400. We look at this, and we know that a lot of other churches grow faster. We've seen that. There's explosive growth. This is strong and steady growth that we feel like we can take this and we can do the qualitative work that's necessary to start people off in a discipleship relationship and raise them up in order to be the leaders and turn back and invest that in other people. On average, we've doubled every 3 years in this ministry. And it's interesting, it takes about 3 years to raise up a leader. So as long as that keeps going, as long as we can maintain that pace, this is going to continue to grow exponentially. You know, 3 years from now, we expect to have close to 800 people involved in what we're doing. Hope it happens. 3 years after that, you know, there's no reason that this can't continue on and support itself as long as the steps are being taken, the investment is being made, and people believe in the movemental aspect of what's going on.
Ryan, these numbers reflect just the college ministry, home churches, and leaders?
Correct.
Leaders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just college. Yep.
So you have 14 home churches that are just college.
Yep. Yeah. When I started in 94, there were 2. And in the last 8 years, those have split out to 14. We're going to have 15 by the end of summer. We'll probably be looking at 16 or 17 by the end of the year.
Are those run pretty much identical to other
houses? Yeah, pretty much. The main difference is ministry houses. Some of the adult groups, they rotate home church and cell group every other week. So they have more of it's a three-tiered structure, but they're going to be more looking at 2 meetings a week instead of 3 meetings a week. But we run all 3 every week. And some adult ministries do that too. My wife was going to talk about discipleship for a few minutes. Okay. Give her a shot, and I'll take the little disciple.
Some of your college students volunteer with the high school group, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of them do, actually.
What night do they
have? Tuesday night. They have Tuesday and Saturday, and a lot of people do Tuesday, and then they leave Saturday open for extracurricular and dating activities.
takes 3 to 5 years to train up a woman to leave.
Typically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to catch them early, but also they stay. I graduated.
Graduation.
Yeah, I graduated. I graduated 2 years ago. You know, when you spend that time developing that personal ministry to just tell someone to uproot and get out, you know, because you're too old, doesn't fly real well, and it's also kind of against the organic movemental aspect of what we try to do. What we find is usually around the age of 28, 29, they're out there, they've got their careers, and they're out there and they're trying to win boss to the Lord, you know, and what are they going to take them back to, you know, the underground grunge, you know, place on campus? No, you know, eventually people get to the point when they start having 2 or 3 kids and they're trying to run the schedule and they're trying to reach out to people more their own age and they want to move on to an adult group. And the way that works is, we send off adult plants. We'll take a smattering of adult age guys that want to get out of the college ministry, and we'll send off in a complete home group out of the college group. They all know each other. They've been involved in each other's lives, you know, for a long time. And they come out and they go up to Xenos under that umbrella. And they're continuing on in the same home group discipleship idea that they've been involved in all along. Works out real well. Yeah, this is kind of cut off. We track things like what we call first-timers, which is someone who's just shown up for the first time ever. Returning new is someone that was not an original member of the split, but has been before. So this number here is original members. So if you're there when the home church splits, you're an original member. This number here, this here is the returning new. This one here, I believe, is transfers. Transfers are defined by they've moved from one home group to another, or if they've come up from the high school ministry. One thing that I should mention is we've gotten real serious about recruiting the high school ministry to come up and throw in and get involved with the ministry that we're doing. Our goal every year is to incorporate 90% of the seniors from the high school ministry into the college ministry, and we've met that goal the last 3 years. And a lot of that has to do with, by the time they're juniors and seniors, they already know what a ministry house is. They're going down there on Friday nights to hang out with people and be a part of the social atmosphere. They want to move in. They see the need. The Ohio State's got 55,000 students. If you add up all the Christian organizations on campus together, you've got maybe 1,500 to 2,000 people that are doing anything for the Lord. And so they see that, and there's not just Ohio State, there's Otterbein, there's Capital, there's Franklin, there's Columbus State Community College, and they'll choose one of those universities and go there and move into a ministry house and really throw in with what we're doing. And that's been a great thing because, you know, the high school ministry is investing so much in those people, and they hate to see them go away and just kind of get lost in the wilderness. So those guys are really more and more getting involved and throwing in with what we're doing. Well, it doesn't look like Jess is coming, so why don't we just, if there are any more questions, if you're involved in a ministry, a college ministry, and you've got something else that's working great going on, I'd love to hear about that. Did you have?
Yeah, I had a question for you. You know, in your normal, your big church, you have a normal type of a service and everything and all that. When you get to your college ministry, you have 3 basic tiers. How does it work financially, teaching them as far as like offerings and stuff like that to your church? Is that, are offerings taken at the house group?
Yes, they are.
And then, you know, that group would then just, you know, use it.
I'm really excited and proud about the way that they deal with finances here. What they do is, I mentioned the fiscal support team. Home churches don't cost any money. They meet in people's homes. They meet in the ministry houses. They're led by indigenous leaders that aren't on salary. The biggest expenses that a home group are going to have are coffee and potato chips, you know, and they're good about meeting that. But we believe that having a stewardship and giving is an important part of being a mature Christian. The Bible teaches that. And so when people are taking these classes, the Christian principles classes, the servanthood classes, and they're being discipled, that's one of the issues that are being dealt with, are being sanctified in the area of your wallet. And they're learning about that. And so at home church, what we do every meeting is we pass the hat and we say, this is for members of this church that consider this their ministry that they want to support. If you're a guest here, we don't want your money and we ask you not to give. And we'll take up the collection there and then send that up. And that goes into the main Xenos fund, just like any other home church, because all of our budget and stuff comes from that. Now, our budget for the college ministry, I think, is around $160,000 a year. We've got 380 students, and they don't come anywhere near meeting that budget. But the principle is the same, you know, to develop a lifestyle of giving and of stewardship to God. If you want to be a leader, you have to be on the fiscal support team, which requires that you give a minimum of 5% of your income. But the cool thing about the fiscal support team is if you're on that team, you get to vote with other members of the church on how the church is going to allocate resources the following year. And the college student who gives $20 a month has exactly the same clout and voting power as the businessman who gives $20,000 a month. There's no discrepancy or difference between the two in the eyes of the church. And so you really get to see, I get to be a part of the policy, I get to be a part of the vision, I get to be a part of, you know, what the emphasis of the church is going to be for the next year. The reason we set the 5% number, we feel like that's a minimal of what would be considered sacrificial. And we encourage people to give more to us or also to other organizations. We want it to be intentionally lower than what it really should be. So if people are giving to missionaries, if they're giving to Red Cross or whatever it is that they want to give to, that they have some money to, so that they're able to do that.
Standards, even though, like, if they're supporting, like, a child, you know, one of those, the compassionary, that's not kept tracking.
No.
Right? But the 5%.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And, you know, I think it's having a good impact on people. I mean, you know, I think this church has grown a lot. We used to not take a collection, not do anything, and the church has grown a lot in that area over the years, to where I think a lot of people are really making huge sacrificial strides and really setting cool examples for what it means to be a giver. Was there a hand? Oh, yeah.
International students?
We have an international student ministry, but it's separate from the college ministry. And the reason for that is the international students have a hard time following along with language. There's a language issue. At CT and at home church teachings, they have a harder time following what's being said. So there's an...
Harry Sarvis.
Yes, Harry Sarvis is in charge of that. And they do a lot of teaching English, a lot of Bible study and investment with students there. The international students are more than welcome to come out to any college meeting that they want to and be involved in anything. But they tend to tend to band together and want to do their own thing. So we're content to let them do that.
Calumet.
We have a
ISS?
Yeah. They meet at Xenos has a school real close to the campus area, and they meet there. Any other questions or comments? Have I overwhelmed you with details?
Is this something here, a lot of students live here in the community, or they travel to the school where they went to middle school? I'm not from around this, I don't know if it is, but do students travel from another city to go to the school? Live in the community and go to that school?
Typically, people are, you know, there's a busing system, and people go you know, within to schools that are relatively close to where they live.
Plus,
you know.
Ohio State has local campuses 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours away.
Yeah, there's little satellite campuses.
So when the students, when they graduate, whatever, they're still here in the community, they move up in the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're fortunate in having the right kind of conditions here in Columbus, where we have lots of universities. The business climate here is such that it's not too hard to find a job. So, you know, the main thing that keeps people is the investment that they've made. You know, they've spent time building this personal ministry, and they really believe that that's, you know, the sweetest and most rewarding thing that they've ever done in their lives. And then, you know, to say I'm going to pick up and leave this for $10,000 more a year in another city, it just doesn't compare. People really really make huge steps and sacrifices because they really see and sense that they're being used powerfully by God. They're caught up in the movement. A lot of the high schoolers choose to go to Ohio State instead of to a more prestigious school because they want to be a part of what God is doing here, and they know that, you know, they can still keep professional doors open by just doing well in school. Well, why don't we pray, and if anyone wants to talk one-on-one or has any more questions, I'll hang around for a little bit.